This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for July 21, 2005. Today we'll have a report on how toxins in the environment are impacting public health. We'll follow up on chemicals being sprayed locally on blueberries. GE Free Maine will tell us about some events they have planned in their ongoing efforts to warn people about the dangers of genetic engineering. And we'll hear from one of the organizers of a celebration being planned to mark the 15th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act next week.
Last week, the findings of a study were made public, which found over 200 industrial chemicals and pollutants in a sampling of umbilical cord blood of babies born in August and September of 2004. Of the 287 chemicals detected, 180 are known cancer causers, 217 are toxic to the brain and nervous system, and 208 cause birth defects or abnormal development in animal tests. Among the chemical compounds found were 8 perfluorochemicals used as stain and oil repellents in fast food packaging, clothes, and textiles, including the Teflon chemical PFOA, dozens of brominated flame retardants, and a number of pesticides. The Environmental Working Group produced the study in collaboration with researchers at 2 major laboratories. Because of the high cost of testing, 10 babies were chosen randomly from mothers participating in Red Cross Volunteers' National Cord Blood Collection Program. They were not chosen because their parents worked in the chemical industry or were suspected to have particular chemical exposure. U.S. industries manufacture 75,000 chemicals a year. When the Toxic Substance Control Act was passed in 1975, 63,000 existing chemicals were deemed safe as used. The law requires government to approve new chemicals within 90 days of the company's application at an average of 7 days, according to the 7 chemicals a day. Sorry, I don't have that statistic correct, according to the report. The law also requires certainty of harm before actions can be taken to protect public health. Industry can limit its voluntary testing reporting to exclude information, including on health and safety, as confidential business information. The Infant Body Burden Report also cites the incidence of cancer has steadily increased over the decades for many forms of disease, including breast, prostate, and testicular. The incidence of childhood cancer increased by 27.1% between 1975 and 2002, with the sharpest rise estimated for brain and other nervous system cancers, 56.5% increase, and acute lymphatic leukemia, 68.7% increase. The incidence of testicular cancer also rose steadily, 66% between 1975 and 2002. The probability that a U.S. resident will develop cancer at some point in his or her lifetime is 1 in 2 for men and 1 in 3 for women. A broad array of environmental factors play a pivotal role in the initiation and promotion of cancer. Just 5 to 10% of all cancers are directly related to inherited genetic factors, according to the report. On Tuesday's program, we spoke with Ann Singer of the Environmental Working Group, who produced the umbilical blood report, and Amanda Sears of the Environmental Health Strategy Center. We continued our discussion with her today. Following up on the information about this new study published by the Environmental Working Group about 287 chemicals, different chemicals being found in the umbilical cord blood of infants tested. And we're talking again with Amanda Sears with the Environmental Health Strategy Center in Maine, who was talking with us on Tuesday about work that people are doing in Maine and things that people can do around the issue of these persistent chemicals. Welcome again, Amanda Sears.
Thank you.
Why don't you talk with us about these different issues that citizens have been working on in Maine, what people can do personally and in the wider realm of legislation?
Sure. Well, the study that came out earlier this week was called Born Polluted, and it was about the fact that a group, the Environmental Working Group, tested babies born in U.S. hospitals in August and September of 2004. They tested their umbilical cord blood for the presence of about 400 chemicals and found that of those 400 chemicals they tested for, they found an average of about 200 chemicals in the cord blood of the babies who were tested. That's pretty consistent with other studies that have been done showing that we are being exposed now to so many chemicals in our daily environments, you know, the places we live and work and play, those chemicals are now building up in our body, and we have what's called a body burden. The shocking thing about this finding, this study, was that not only do we as adults have this body burden, but even newborn babies are being born with chemicals, synthetic chemicals that are in the environment due to industrial uses of these chemicals in consumer products and processes, industrial processes. We're finding that now those chemicals are also building up in our newborn babies before they even take their first breath. So, you know, I think the first question people ask is, well, what do I do? You know, how do I reduce my own exposure to these chemicals? So there are, you know, some pretty pretty good steps people can take to reduce some of their exposures. So, you know, eating organic is one of those. In terms of how to do that in a way that is really cost-effective, I think there's some pretty good ways to do that. Both, of course, to grow your own food where you can control what goes on it. So in Maine in the summer, you know, you have a good opportunity to actually grow a good portion of your vegetables. And then also one of the things that I do personally is I belong to a community-supported agriculture program. So I actually buy a share in a farm and then get my vegetables through the farm, and that gives me a really cost-effective way to get to eat mostly organic for a good portion of the year, which is really exciting. Another thing is looking at household cleaners and body products. Those are another way that people are exposed to a lot of chemicals just through the things that they use in their house and on their body every day. And so, you know, make a list of what you use every day and look into how you can switch to things that are safer for you and for the environment, both by making your own and by buying more natural products. So there are some things that you can do to protect yourself, but some of the chemicals that were found in this study and many of the chemicals that people are exposed to every day aren't chemicals that we can really control our exposure to. So things like brominated flame retardants and the perfluorinated compounds are a couple of those that are at this point so ubiquitous in the environment. They're, you know, the brominated flame retardants, they're in the computer monitors and the TV monitors that you're in front of every day and the upholstery that you sit on and the carpets that you walk on. They're really in so many of the products that are around. We need government action to step in and to make sure that they're helping to protect us from these chemicals, because we can't just make all the decisions ourselves in our daily lives. So there's a lot of things that people in Maine are asking the state of Maine to take action on to make sure that we're taking action to protect our health.
And Maine has been, the legislature has been already active on some of these chemicals that the Environmental Health Strategy Center and others have been working on as well?
Yes, definitely. Maine's really been a leader on reducing the use of many of these chemicals in consumer products, things like mercury and arsenic and lead. One of the classes of chemicals that we really need more action on is the brominated flame retardants. Here in Maine, we passed a bill last year that went into law that bans two of those brominated flame retardants. And then the legislature is going to come back this winter and decide whether or not to actually go forward with what they passed 2 years ago, which is an intent to ban the most widely used of the brominated flame retardants. So we really need the support of the people of Maine to tell the legislature that, in fact, they should go forward with this ban. What happened was the legislature asked the Department of Environmental Protection to look into whether there were safe, effective alternatives that were available. And since that time, two reports have come out saying that, in fact, there are safer, effective alternatives. And so we need the legislature to go forward with that intent to ban that they passed 2 years ago and actually ban that most widely used brominated flame retardant this winter.
Another chemical is Teflon, or part of the Teflon chemicals, the perfluorochemicals?
Yes. In the study that the Environmental Working Group did, many of the samples came back that these babies are being exposed to perfluorinated chemicals. They're called PFCs. These are chemicals used in nonstick coatings, fast food packaging, Gore-Tex, and a lot of other products. They're largely unregulated, and they're now being found in virtually everything we look for them in. You know, umbilical cord blood, seal blubber, household dust. They're really being found everywhere. And there's really nothing going on to regulate their use.
Is it seen that it's getting into people's bodies from the actual use of the products or from the manufacturing of the products?
Like with a lot of consumer products, it's actually from the use of the products. So over their lifetime, you know, if you have a couch coated with Scotchgard, you're just going to be breathing that in over time. You know, you're going to be getting some of those compounds into your dust in your home and the air in your home, and you're just going to be breathing it in over time. Same thing with Teflon coating on pans. It's really from using the products. You know, one of the problems, though, is that it's everywhere at this point. You know, I actually have looked on the Teflon website. It's called Teflon World, and they walk you through a whole house. They have a diagram of a house, and, you know, their whole slogan is Teflon. It's everywhere. But one of the things that they don't do on the website is you can't click on the person. You know, they show you in all the different products what Teflon is in, but on the website, of course, they don't show you that it's also in the people. And that's what we think is a big problem, is that it's everywhere and it's unregulated, and we need to make sure that it stops, that this synthetic chemical doesn't continue to end up in people.
Amanda, we'll just have to need to wrap it up there for time's sake. A last thought.
Sure. The other thing I'd say is that we really need in Maine to adopt a comprehensive policy to prevent harm, so that we can act to protect public health by instituting a chemicals management policy that requires adequate health and safety testing and the use of safer alternatives to chemicals that persist in the environment and that are building up in our bodies.
That was Amanda Sears, Environmental Health Strategy Center. They can be reached at preventharm.org or at 772-2181. They will also have a table at the Full Circle Fair. The Environmental Working Group's report can be seen on the web at ewg.org/reports/bodyburden and then the numeral 2.
WERU volunteer Kathy Melio informed us yesterday that she'd been notified about some aerial spraying that's happening in the area. And since then, Meredith has been following up and investigating. And what have you learned, Meredith, about the situation?
Well, yesterday, Allen's Blueberry out of Ellsworth and GM Allen & Son out of Orland announced it would be spraying the insecticide glutathione by helicopter on a number of towns in the listening area today. The aerial spraying of blueberry pesticides has been halted by two of Maine's largest blueberry growers, Jasper Wyman & Sons and Cherryfield Foods, after environmental organizations announced they intended to sue the companies for violating the Clean Water Act by perpetrating pesticide drift into the Maine's waterways. Early this morning, James Allen's company said it would be spraying glutathione aerially by helicopter in Penobscot, Surrey, Orland, Blue Hill, Sedgwick, and Dedham. A total of approximately 400 acres would be sprayed on fields varying in size from 10 acres to 150 acres. The fields were identified by the industry's names for them in Penobscot, the Stanley Grindle Field, the Tom Pickering Field, the Robertson Field, and the Patton Lot in 199. In Surrey, the Carlisle and the Harper Lots. In Orland, the Burrell Lot. In Blue Hill, Silver Hill. In Sedgwick, off the Sedgwick Ridge Road, and also in Dedham. Jason Allen says people in the spray areas can be notified if you hours in advance if they call to get on that list.
And if you are in the area downwind or you're driving through the area, what do they suggest that you do if you're worried about getting sprayed?
Well, we didn't get too far into the conversation, but he did say people could close their windows because apparently there's a smell that's been that's associated has been mixed in, so people are aware if a field has been sprayed, there's a aroma that comes with it. He didn't seem to believe that the aroma meant that you actually had the chemical coming in your window, but he said to close your windows. Jason Allen also said that that people are not notified unless they actually call and ask to be notified in advance, and oftentimes there isn't a lot of warning because they apparently make decisions very shortly before, according to weather patterns, because the wind does carry the glutathione, and they say that they want to avoid drift, which is obviously a huge issue.
So if you're away for the day, they could potentially call you in the morning and miss you, and if you've left your windows open, then you're just kind of out of luck in terms of it drifting into your house?
It's short advance. There are some numbers that people can call. For Jason Allen, which is out of Ellsworth, it's 667-5561. That's 667-5561. And he said he's open for questions and concerns, so encourages
people to call and get on the list. GM Allen and Son plans to be spraying, or said they plan to be spraying in Stockton Springs this morning. The Dunover Field appeared to be the indicated site. Their phone number is 469-2307. Again, unless you tell them that you want to be notified that they're spraying, aerial spraying the Guthion, in your area, then you won't be notified unless you tell them. Both companies said if it was too windy by their industry standards, they would postpone spraying, and we couldn't confirm before airtime whether it had been sprayed or not. And at this time, neither wanted to comment on why they continue to aerial spray Guthion while other industries have discontinued because of the drift.
Safety concerns.
We should mention that the local citizens working group on pesticide issues in the area crops will also have a table at the Full Circle Fair, and we'll have more information on this as well.
Great. And in more news on food safety, GE Free Maine has several events planned around the state in the next few months. They're hoping to increase awareness of the dangers associated with genetic engineering, including food. We're joined today by Rob Fish of GE Free Maine. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Meredith.
Hi.
Sounds like you've got a pretty full schedule in the next few months with a lot of different ways for people to get involved. Why don't you go ahead and tell folks a little bit about what's going to be happening?
Well, the fall is definitely going to be a busy time, especially in this part of Maine, starting with the first week of August. We're going to be hosting Deborah Coons Garcia.
I'm sorry, Rob, but you can't start fall the first week of August.
Ah,
I just have
yeah.
to say. Okay. All right, that's next
well,
week. It's too
we're
soon.
We're a little extended
okay,
season
so,
here.
All right.
So we're going to be hosting Deborah Coons Garcia. She's the creator and director of The Future of Food. For the first week of August, we're going to be having stops in Waterville, Bar Harbor, Deer Isle, and Machias. The Bar Harbor event seems to be growing by the moment. We're having a benefit dinner for GE 3 Maine at Havana's, one of the best restaurants in town, from 4 to 6 p.m., and all the food's going to be prepared using only GE 3 ingredients. Then we're going to have two showings at Real Pizza of the film at 6 and 8:30, followed by a panel discussion with Deborah Coons Garcia, the director, and with Brian Tokar, the director of the Biotech Project and author of several books on genetic engineering, and Ron Greenberg, the vice president of the alternative market. And then following that, there'll be a reception at Rupanuni. So it's going to be a busy night. On Wednesday, we'll be having a showing in Deer Isle at the Congregational Church, on Thursday and in Machias.
So in case in case anybody missed any of that, is there a website that you have this all posted on, or email address or phone number for more information?
Yep. There's a list of all the events for the tour up at gefreemaine.org, and if you're interested in the dinner, we strongly encourage that you contact us and make a reservation. If we don't get enough reservations, we may have to cancel the dinner. And for make a reservation, you can call 244-0908, and we're asking for a sliding scale donation of $35, so whatever you can do, we need it.
And there's information about the film at thefutureoffood.com?
Yes, we also have it up on our website, including a link to the trailer.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. Rob Fish of GE Free Maine. And next we are going to a story about the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Next Tuesday marks the 15th anniversary of the passage of the act, and events are being planned around the country in honor of the occasion. Steve Hode is one of the organizers of a celebration that's going to be happening here in Maine, and he joins us now by phone to tell us more about that. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. I'd like to emphasize that it is still indeed a summer celebration.
Thank you.
So you can bring your picnic and have a lunch and enjoy yourself in Capitol Park in Augusta.
Great.
I think something which I should start off with might be a link, a website where people can find more information just in case they're interested in it. They can go to www.abilitymaine.org, and that is like the state of Maine, abilitymaine.org. And on that front page is a link to the ADA celebration.
Okay. Why was the ADA so significant? Why was that legislation so significant, and what are some of the important things that have come from it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In terms of generations, 15 years isn't a very long time, and yet some things that people take for granted now were not necessarily happening in 1989 and 1990. People with disabilities ranging from mental illness to deafness to blindness all found that it was legal for businesses and the government, in fact, to discriminate against them, to tell them that they didn't want their business, to say that they didn't need to have access to various services or places around the country. And so over a period of 5 or 6 years, and actually more with a lot of underground advocacy, people with disabilities really worked hard to get this law passed. Bob Dole did a significant amount of work on that. Bob Dole was a disabled war veteran from World War II and understood the value of the real ability for people with disabilities to get things done. Being a senator and someone who had been out in the mainstream of life, he realized maybe more than anybody else that people with disabilities had a lot to contribute to society. And I think that the Americans with Disabilities Act not only created a law where discrimination by businesses and in housing and in a number of arenas was no longer legal, one could not discriminate anymore, but it also created an attitude where people could actually begin to understand the kinds of contributions that people with disabilities could make to society.
Hmm. And what legislatively does it, it basically just says you can't discriminate. What about the access and accessibility pieces of the law?
Well, like any legislation, there's a lot of long and involved verbiage, and it's something that almost anybody can read if they want to take a look at it. But the basic kinds of access that it provides is access to business, access to public transportation, access to reasonable accommodations on the job, and access to a lot of the services that people who don't have disabilities, or at least don't have visible disabilities, can expect. Another interesting thing that the Americans with Disabilities Act has made happen is that when applying for a job, a person does not need to declare their disability, nor can an employer ask if a person has a disability.
Right, right. You can just ask if the person can perform the job with or without accommodations, and
that's
just
right.
Expect a yes or no answer to that.
That's right.
Right. So so if the person answers yes, then reasonable accommodations, I think, is how it's worded, right?
Yes.
So so you're going to be celebrating this, and I know that we spoke earlier today, and just pretty much by the hour, the plans are unfolding and more things are being added. But what so far is planned for Tuesday?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We've decided that we want to have a celebration of positive progress. There are a lot of things that haven't happened, and a lot of things that a lot of hopes that haven't come to pass yet with the Americans with Disabilities Act. But in order to celebrate, you really have to look at the positive. So we've planned such things as a story and conversation circle where people can sit down and talk with each other about some of the effects of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And, of course, face painting for children of all ages. I thought maybe I'd get my face painted down there. There's going to be an interesting activity put on by an organization from the University of Southern Maine called Choices. People are going to be able to talk about and record on paper their dreams and hopes for employment over the next 5 years. Because employment's a big issue, that's one thing that hasn't really improved for people with disabilities is the employment sector. There'll be a number of organizations there, who will be exhibiting and talking with people about what they do. They are not all organizations by and for people with disabilities. Some of them are just organizations that want to reach out to these communities. We're going to have some speakers at noon. Hopefully not a lot of political speaking. Some of it, I think, will be pretty motivational speaking. Maybe the best part is the fact that a lot of the organizations that are coming are going to be bringing snacks.
I like
to eat as much as anybody. maybe more than most people. And door prizes, yes. Well, there's no door, so they're just prizes, really.
Park prizes.
And basically, we're going to have a family-friendly picnic, inviting folks to bring their children and to network with the community of people with disabilities. Sometimes children are the most curious and want to know, why are you in that wheelchair, and why do you use that white cane, and what's that dog that you're holding on to? And this is a chance for families and parents to bring their children and meet some people and really talk with folks and find out what's going on.
And, of course, you've been working on making it as accessible as possible.
Accessibility is a real it's almost become an art, and there are things that one has to think about when one gets involved in, especially in an outdoor setting. How easily can a wheelchair get from here to there, and how easy will the parking be so that people in wheelchairs can get out of their vehicles once they get to the place? And will the deaf people that come be able to understand what's going on without being able to hear it? So we're going to have interpreters there, so that everybody can communicate with everybody, so to speak. And we've done a significant amount of site preparation, just looking at how we're going to set things up so that it will be accessible to people with various physical disabilities.
Okay. Steve, we're actually out of time. I know we are going to follow up. There were some points that we didn't cover, and we had planned to follow up with you in a couple of weeks anyway to hear more about how things went and where you're going from here. So we will do that. One piece that we didn't touch on was transportation, and I know that you're still hoping somebody can help with coordinating transportation. So if they want to talk to you about that or have other questions, where can people get more information real quick?
They can call area code 207, of course, 445-2141. And I have an email address, which is mainfun40@hotmail.com. I just want to say that this is Tuesday, July the 26th, from 10 to 5 in Capitol Park. And we'd love to see some people from down east.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Steve Hode.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support.
You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@mainindymedia.org. Listen to archive programs on our website, radioactivenews.org.
And we're now podcasting. Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned for more independent news on your community radio station, WERU. And join us again next Thursday at 4 for Radioactive.